Okay, we are on page 243, 244, three lines from the bottom of the page by the dot where it says Vav Zion Shin, which stands for Vizeshikosuv. And in the English, it's right by the dot, the last paragraph that starts, this is the meaning of the text. Okay. We have been talking about arousing a natural love and fear of Hashem based on the idea that Hashem is doing such wonderful things for us, so therefore we should automatically love Hashem. That's been the basic gist of it. And if you need a refresher, go to rabbifinman.com, or for those people who are listening, rabbifinman.com, it's the previous lesson. So, this, get right to it. Vizesh Amar, Shirkei Hashem Mitzvaysav.
Do you think maybe stop
there? No, yeah. This is what it's our when we. This is the text of the bracha that we say before any mitzvah. Who has sanctified us with His commandments? Ka adam hamikadosh isha, like a person who marries a woman. The word for marrying again in Hebrew is kiddushin, like the idea of kadosh. Lies miyuchadis imay biyichud gamer. To be united with her in absolute unity, as it says in the pasuk, by when Adam and Chava were made to cleave to his wife, and that they should be one flesh. That the word for kiddushin, kaddish, we know means to be separate, and a woman and kiddushin, getting married is called kiddushin, is because now she is separate from the rest of the world, and she's not allowed to marry anybody else. That's why we use the expression kaddish. It actually says that the word kaddish means to be dedicated towards. So in this case, she becomes dedicated to him. So, you know, this is a cute aside. I was at an anniversary party for somebody that I learned with. And someone asked me, are you going to renew your vows? So, which is like one of those things people do out in the veldt. No. You know, so... So I said to him, let me ask you a question. What do you mean renew your vows? When you remember back to your wedding day, I asked the lady, I said, what vows did you make? And she said, nothing. I just stuck out my finger. I said, exactly. And I said to him, what vow did you make?
No.
And he said, I just stood there and told him, said, whatever the rabbi said, I gave the ring. And that's it. So I said, you guys never made any vows, okay? The vows didn't come afterwards when you were yelling at each other. And you don't want to renew those. So, that's just an aside. Anyway, K'moshe Kasev Hadav Hu Davik Rishol Yelachadya Kacha Mamish V'Yeser Al Kain Lain Kates. And so to it is how much more so infinitely so is the Yichud Hanefesh Elokis Ha'Isakas Beteira Umitzas Hanefesh Hachayunis Luvashah Hanel Bo'arin Tzai Baruch Hu. When a person does a mitzvah, what happens is they become united with Hashem. Did I tell the story last week about the Alter Rebbe leaning against the doorpost?
Thank you.
Yeah.
I still got one saying, other. This is why I said, yeah, okay, good. I know I said it last week over here, okay. So that when a person does a mitzvah, we become kaddish, we become mikudesh, we become singular and unique, we become the property of Hashem. And anybody doing a mitzvah, regardless of whatever else they do, at the time that they're doing the mitzvah, that person becomes, you should pardon the expression, a holy dude. Because what's happening at the time of the doing of the mitzvah is they're engaged in the will of Hashem, and they're connected to the will of Hashem in an ultimate unity that is indescribable. They have become, as we said last week, they have become the conveyors of the will of Hashem, which is what led us into this whole section anyway to begin with. And what part is it? It's not only just his godly soul, which is the impetus behind him getting to go do the mitzvah, but also the thought, speech, and action of his animal soul, which is the vitality behind the actual doing it, and also the body, which is which he is doing the mitzvah. They all become incorporated into this unity. And I'll take it one step further than that, and we talked about this before, the object by which he is utilizing to this unity, to facilitate this unity, also becomes incorporated in the will of Hashem. Mm-hmm. And everything which is ancillary to it. It becomes like a whole a vertical and horizontal monopoly over here. Okay, if you come to shul to do something, then the whole shul becomes a vehicle for the incorporated in the will of Hashem. And it could very well, you can go back from, and take it one step further and say, well, with the shuls in Oak Park, for example. So we're going to incorporate the entire Oak Park. It's a bit of a stretch, but the shul wouldn't be in Oak Park if there wasn't any Oak Park. So and now you can take that even further into the to go to the ultimate end, and we finally get to with all the wriggling and jiggling and tiggling inside. You're going to say the whole spectrum of creation, the whole Seder Histalshulus, because if there hadn't been an Atzilus, we wouldn't be here either.
Right.
So all of that, the entire spectrum of creation, now becomes incorporated in the will and wisdom of Hashem when a person does a mitzvah. Because the whole one single mitzvah, a quarter in a pushka. Because the entire spectrum of creation has to be utilized to get that quarter, to get into that pushka, wherever that pushka might be at that specific time. So whatever, whenever it is a person is doing a mitzvah, so they are they're affecting the entire world, all of it, the entire creation.
Would the creation, the entire creation outside of this one planet already be in the will of Hashem, since it's, we haven't had a chance?
What's it there for?
Hashem willed it to be there for, to...
You're right.
I have,
you're
for
right.
a reason,
question,
I don't
you're right.
fully
you're right.
understand.
You're right. Okay.
Honestly.
But the forces of evil are here for a purpose too. So you might say they're there for the will of Hashem also.
To give us a path. We can't choose.
Okay, good. So, but Hashem didn't create the world for the forces of evil.
They're
part of the whole plan of creation, yes. Right. And everything in here is, if you didn't do a mitzvah, you'd have to say, I'm here because this is the way Hashem wants me to be. Mm. You know, we're talking about in Parshas Emor last week, all the different... disabilities that invalidated the Kohen from serving on the altar. Okay, so you're left-handed. Okay, so you come to the question of who is it that decided that this person should be left-handed?
Hashem
made this person left-handed. So what does that mean? Hashem doesn't want this Kohen to be working on the altar. Better he should be working in the laundry or the janitorial staff or doing who knows what, guarding something. Who knows what this guy's going to do? It says he still gets all the benefits.
He can
eat truma.
He
gets all the 24 gifts. He gets all that stuff. He's not allowed to do a couple of specific jobs because he's left-handed. Mm. Okay, but meaning what? Hashem sided, I don't need this guy working for me on the altar. And we'll take it one step further. Hashem doesn't need any of us working on the altar either because none of us are Kohanim and there isn't an altar anyway. Mm-hmm. So whose decision was that? That's all Hashem.
Right.
Okay, so you can say there's nothing in the world that exists without being in the will of Hashem, but to be unified with it in this ultimate unity that we're talking about so that they become one entity, like a husband and a wife become a couple. They become one single entity. That's only done by the performance of the mitzvahs.
Just like the sheep herder in New Zealand making wool that's going to end up in the tzitzits of a Jew.
Correct.
Doing a mitzvah. So
right, that's what I'm saying. It's a whole vertical and horizontal monopoly.
Okay.
Correct. V'lachein him shul shlema melech al v'shalom v'shir hashirim yechud zeh l'yichud chasen v'kala. Didn't we do this last week? Okay, I'll just finish this since we started. So that's why Shlomo HaMelech, I won't make the same joke again. Shlomo HaMelech compared this unity to the unity of a bride and a groom with hugging and kissing and longing and lusting. This is what it means when we say he has sanctified us with his commandments. That by doing the mitzvahs, we achieve the level of sanctity of Hashem. That would be the other difference. Right now, are you doing the will of Hashem? If you're doing whatever you're doing, are you doing what Hashem wants? Ultimately, the guise of Hashgacha Pratis, you have to say, yeah. But is the person achieving this unity? Is this person achieving being incorporated and part of the will of Hashem? The answer is no. He's doing what Hashem wants because Hashem gave him a little push, go this way. But to be absolutely inclusive in it, no. That's only accomplished by doing mitzvahs. The word Kaddish means separated. Masha Kaddish Baruch Hu moved on the Ha'olamos, that which Hashem is separated from the world. And he says, when you're talking about the levels of revelation, it sounds actually quite low. Because he says that this is an expression of Sovev Kol Omni. Sovev Kol Omni means it encompasses all worlds. But if you're talking about the Ratzon for Olamos, the desire that there be will, the desire that there be worlds, you would have to say then that's related to world. There's a relationship there with the world. Hashem has a desire for there to be a world, so that means what? That is a relationship to the world. What part of the world does Hashem want? He wants all of it. So therefore we say it's, and which parts does he want most? Well, he wants it all most. It's all the same. This is what he wants, the world the way he wants it. He wants this whole thing.
Right. This will isn't a multiple choice question.
No, this is not. It's a trick question.
All the above.
Yeah. So the so therefore this level of will is, I don't like using the word encompassing, because when you think of encompassing, you start thinking circles. And it's not, because Hashem's will is in this world as much as any other divine revelation. It's just that it is equal in everything. It's the level of godliness that's causing the world to exist equally. Everything exists. And when we do a mitzvah, we're able to tap into that higher level. Normally, if a person's just going around his business day, so his life force is coming from Memale Kolomim, the godliness which is enclosed in the world. And everything gets a specific amount of godliness, and this is how much the person is getting. When a person does a mitzvah, so now he gets, his godliness is getting bumped up a degree. It's not just the godliness which is enclosed and revealed and seen in the world. It's coming from that level of godliness which is above the limitations of world, but it still relates to world. So that's what it says. It's only Sovev Kol Omim. There is one exception to that. And that's the mitzvah, which is a mitzvah in and of itself. It's its own idea. It's one of those mitzvahs which is more than a mitzvah, and that's teshuva. Ah. Because what's teshuva? A person didn't do something or did something he wasn't supposed to do, and therefore the person is missing in their connection. So they've got a gap. They've got a missing link. They've got a nick, a dent, or something like that. When the person does tshuva, they're not relating to Hashem's will anymore. They're relating to what's referred to as the Baal HaRatzon, the purveyor of the will, which is right. Higher than the will.
Right.
So when a person does tshuva, they're going beyond levels of creation which relate to levels of revelation which are beyond those which relate to the creation. The mitzvahs all relate to the creation, because all the mitzvahs have to be done in a physical world. And so therefore, the desire for them has to be manifest physical, so therefore there's a relationship world. That's why it's called Soviv Kol Olmim. It affects the world. The mitzvah of tshuva, and also martyrdom also, which is also a mitzvah. And I don't try to, I don't recommend
that.
Don't try that one at home, yes. Also relates to tshuva, martyrdom even higher.
Yeah, sure.
Because the will, the level of tshuva relates to the level of Baal HaRatzon, and which is beyond, but Mesiras Nefesh relates to essence.
Okay.
Which is why it doesn't, you could come up with some kind of reason and rationale and understand why you put on tefillin. Even though it's like one of the freakiest mitzvahs, if you didn't know about tefillin, you're just looking at somebody the first time putting on tefillin, it would look so flipped out, like, what is this guy doing? And teshuva, you can understand also, because the person says, I want to have a relationship with Hashem, I've done something which has spoiled that relationship, and having to rely and dig down deeper and develop higher powers from within me is what's going to establish that greater relationship with Hashem to smooth things over. So that makes sense. Okay, getting myself killed doesn't make any sense. And anyway, you can't, there's no way to rationalize Mesiras Nefesh, self-sacrifice, because it's beyond anything having to do with rationalization. It's an expression of the essence. And we see, what's the effect of Mesiras Nefesh? You have, like for example, with Rabbi Akiva, that after the Romans raked off all of his skin with hot iron combs, his students went and saw that he was smiling. And they said, Kulei Hai, you're smiling? How could you be smiling now? And he said, my whole life I wanted to sanctify Hashem's name. Now that I'm sanctifying Hashem's name, I shouldn't be happy about it. Tell me how that makes sense, please. There's no rationalization there whatsoever. It's well beyond intellect. It's even beyond being beyond intellect.
Yeah. It wouldn't be the intellect of like the higher angels that worship with the service them with intellect.
No, it's because they're just pre-programmed.
Yeah. But this mentions and
no, this is yeah, yeah, no, this is beyond all that, because this is supra rational.
Right, supra rational.
Not super, supra.
Supra.
Going beyond, well beyond rationalization. There's no way to say how any of that makes any sense. And the added extra bonus is, what do we call a martyr in Hebrew? A kaddish. That person achieves that level of separation from the mundane that we can call that person separate from the mundane. This person is given the title holy because of what they did. Okay?
Wow.
That means that is all an expression of being incorporated in the infiniteness of Hashem. I did that already. Because when you have this unity and the incorporation of the soul into the light of the Infinite One, blessed be He, who b'maylus amadregas kedushas ein sof baruch hu, that's a person achieves this level and quality of the holiness of the Infinite One, blessed be He, mamish. So at that point it actually becomes easy because Hashem takes over. What happens? A person throws a quarter into a pushka and he is totally, you can see the next chapter, he is totally and completely enveloped in divine will. What is he doing? He's just throwing a quarter in a pushka. But that's not it at all. That's not what he's doing. What he's doing is uniting himself with the infiniteness of Hashem. Because Hashem wants him to throw that quarter into that pushka. This is what it means when the Pasuk says, and you shall be holy because I, Hashem, am holy. And I have separated you from among the nations to be mine, to be to me. Okay, this is what it says. It's the expression of Va'ata v'chartana v'kol amim. You've separated us from all the nations. And that I would always point out, what was it that Hashem chose, when Hashem chose the Jewish people? It wasn't the neshamas, because that's not a choice. A choice is only when you have two things which are comparable. And the nefesh elokis of a Jew and the nefesh of a guy is not comparable. It'd be like saying, which would you rather have? Would you rather have a brand new Cadillac or a tricycle?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, that's not a choice. There's no choice there. I ask you, if you want to have a brand new Cadillac, would you rather have a new Porsche? Okay, so you say a Porsche, a Cadillac, a this, yes, you know, American, German, foreign, and domestic, whatever it is, you can go through the whole, now you can start rationalizing which one you want and why you want it. So that's how you make a choice. Mm. So the souls, it's not a choice for Hashem. It's the bodies.
It's the body.
It just so happens that a Jewish body kind of looks sort of like a non-Jewish body. They have like similarities, you know. We can do comparative anatomy
eyes,
or research.
Nose, mouth, yeah.
Yes, basically, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, and so Hashem shows us that we should be because of what our bodies are able to do, and that's a brief explanation as to why we have to eat kosher. Is because there are variances. If it would be that our bodies would be exactly like the rest of the nations of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Then, which would you rather have, a Cadillac or a Cadillac? It's the same thing. You know, if I could show two identical cars and say, which one do you want?
It could have been a Cadillac and a Lincoln.
No, I'm saying Cadillac and Cadillac. If you have two identical Cadillacs, and I say, okay, choose which one you want. It doesn't matter at that point, because they're both exactly the same.
Right.
So there are differences anatomologically.
3 minutes.
Okay? But, I'm not a doctor. I can't tell if there's been any studies done on the difference between a Jewish body and a non-Jewish body, and if there would be, would a medical doctor know any difference,
could he find it? Right.
And it specifically says in a halacha that if you have a choice between going to a not so Jewish doctor and a world specialist who's not Jewish, guess which one you go to?
The world specialist,
yeah. Because listen, you want the best guy,
right.
You want the best doctor.
What about a convert who becomes, is there...
A convert's a weird, it's not a weird, it's an interesting scenario because a convert is actually a Jewish person who just didn't know that they were Jewish. They had to like remove that like outer cover or whatever it was that was what was hiding their Jewishness.
Not just in a shell, but...
Yeah, physically also.
Oh.
Okay, they always had a Jewish soul. It didn't, we're told that it didn't come into the body until they came out of the mikveh. Which is going to indicate that there's also, their body has got to be different also at that point.
In ways we still don't understand.
No, we're not going to, because we don't understand it at all.
No.
You know? V'amer v'asisim es kol mitzvahis v'yisim k'deshim l'lokechem. And it says, you should do all the mitzvahs and you should be holy to Hashem. Ani Hashem l'lokechem, because I am Hashem. You are God. That means that through doing all of the mitzvahs, I become your God. Okay, that we get to use this as a title. And more than this, it's like possessive. Hashem belongs to us and we belong to Hashem. Just like Abraham, as he says in the next chapter also. That Abraham merited to have he called Elokei Avraham, the God of Abraham, because Hashem put a label on him because of what Abraham was able to accomplish in this world. That's how he got the title, that's the title got stuck onto Hashem, of God of Abraham, but it was Abraham's God as well. That the forefathers were vehicles for conveying God's will. They gave up their freedom of choice and therefore merited to have this title. And this is the way it is with every single Jew when they sit and learn Torah and do mitzvahs. Even if the person you would call, I don't use the expression a lowlife, you know, a boor and a, he translated as like, you know, low class, but it's not, Jews aren't like that, but you get the idea.
Yeah.
You know, so this person, back to chapter 32, used the expression b'riyos ba'alma. The only thing that you can say about this guy is that Hashem went to all the trouble of creating him.
Yeah.
But other than that, he's like, got nothing going for him.
Yeah, exactly.
Even such a person like that, when they're sitting and doing a mitzvah, becomes incorporated in Hashem. This is a famous...
Created to the mitzvah.
Yeah, there's a famous story about a certain Hungarian who was had a Gemara shir in his house in Williamsburg. And he went into... Gavi Yechidus with the Rebbe. Whatever the different details was, how he got there, why he got there, why he wanted to be, you know, he was a Sakmechos, and he went to say he needs to go to see the Lubavitch Rebbe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The line in Lubavitch is when they need the bracha, they know the address.
Uh-huh.
You know, so, but,
right.
So the Rebbe said to him, I understand that you recently made a Siyam and you're on the Masechta that you're learning. So they said, yeah. And they said, what Masechta was? It was Tainus. And so you'd like to share maybe some of the discussions that you had, so the guy just like froze. He's going to start saying Chiddushi Torah in front of the Rebbe. I mean, you know.
Right, sure.
So the guy froze. He had enough sensitivity. He says, well, maybe there was the Rebbe said, maybe there's a question that came up that didn't get answered. And he said, yeah, there was. Because it says over there at the end of Masechta Tainus, Afilu Pashei Yisrael Malei Mitzvahs Kerimah, that even a negligent Jew is filled with mitzvahs like a pomegranate is filled with seeds. Okay, so the question came up is, if he's a negligent Jew, how can he be filled with mitzvahs like a pomegranate is filled with seeds? And the Rebbe, whose demeanor at that point, he described as it was very grandfatherly, like he was talking to his Zeta, suddenly became very serious. Mm-hmm. Like the whole room became like really like somber.
Yeah.
And the Rebbe said, I also learned that Gemara, but I asked the question a little differently. If he's doing mitzvahs like a pomegranate filled with seeds, why is he called a negligent Jew? Yeah, so he's not a negligent. He's doing mitzvahs like he's got as many mitzvahs as a pomegranate filled with seeds. Why are you calling him negligent? Mm-hmm. The Gemara says even a negligent Jew is even filled with mitzvahs like a pomegranate filled with seeds. He's doing so many mitzvahs. Why are you calling him negligent?
It could be like an orchard.
So I mean, you know, I mean, I've often said and it's been quoted here that basically the difference between a frum person and a not frum Jew is three mitzvahs: Shabbos, kosher, and mikvah. That's really what it all boils down to. You know, if they don't put on tefillin, sometimes they do put on tefillin, they never put on tefillin. But, you know, most Jews have some kind of inkling as to the mitzvahs between Bein Adam L'Chavero, for sure they're doing the Ahavta L'Rei'ach, Chok Kamocho stuff, and the fair weights and measures, and the scale, and these type of things. But they also, you know, many people have mezuzahs on their doors, and they go hear shofar on Rosh Hashanah, and they eat maybe matzah on Pesach, you know, this kind of stuff. But a lot of Jews are doing that you wouldn't call a religious Jew. So what makes a religious Jew? Shabbos, kosher, and mikveh. Okay, it's three mitzvahs. That's the whole difference.
Taras HaMishpacha, I would have thought you
were. That's mikvah.
That's what mikvah means.
Mikvah means Taras HaMishpacha, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so they're doing 610, and they're called negligent. Okay? It's an amazing thing that you have a guy who plays baseball, and if he can hit the ball 4 times out of 10, he's lauded as one of the greatest hitters in all history.
Right.
If you got a 40% on any exam that you ever took, what would they call you?
A failure.
But this guy,
yeah.
So this person is now, he's 610 out of 613 he's doing.
Right.
It's called a negligent Jew.
Yeah.
Okay? Just to show you the effects. Yeah. Hashem Hashem mislavish benasha b'shazu. Because Hashem, at the time, regardless of who the person is, what they're doing before, what they're doing after, you know, so let's hold up, sit over here, the mushroom, and when a lady, when I didn't want to take a Shabbos candle, she says, because I watched television all Friday night.
Yeah.
Says, oh, they're good. Put light the Shabbos candle on the top of the television.
Right.
Which you could do back when, before the advent of HD and flat screens.
Yes, indeed, yes.
Okay, because the lighting of the candle doesn't take away from what you did before, what you did after.
Right.
That's in itself, it's an encapsulated act right by itself. And the person, are they doing the will of Hashem when they're lighting that candle and saying that bracha?
Yes.
100%. Are they having and experiencing all the ramifications and benefits?
Yes.
100%. What happens afterwards doesn't take away from that this person did now. That's why we say every good thing that a person does is a good thing.
Yes.
The only thing is with this person, they may not feel it, because since it is that their bodies are not so accustomed and attuned, they're not tuned in to spirituality. So if this guy gets approached in front of a government building, somebody says, hey buddy, you got any spare change? And he flips the guy a quarter. He did the mitzvah, tzedakah. Did he feel like he's doing a mitzvah? No, he doesn't feel necessarily that he's doing a mitzvah. He feels that maybe he's helping mankind. And he might even know the buzzword, tikkun olam. He has just made the world a better place because he flipped this guy a quarter. That's because hasn't changed himself to sense the spirituality in the acts that he has done. Has the spirituality indeed incurred? Is this person incorporated in the will and wisdom of Hashem? Absolutely 100%. In Judaism, the fact that you don't see it means it still could happen. Just because you didn't see it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. No. Okay, the expression in Kesubis is lo reina eina raya, because you can't, because you say I never saw it, doesn't mean it doesn't, that's no proof that it doesn't exist. Okay, so the fact that you don't see yourself becoming incorporated in Hashem, mach l'shoyis, you're still becoming incorporated in Hashem. And I got news for you, if a person is doing all of these quote-unquote mitzvahs, not knowing that they're mitzvahs, are they going to have a positive effect on that person?
Yes.
Oh, absolutely yes.
Yes, yes, yes,
yes. Yes, indeed. Absolutely.
100%. Torah effects. End of story. Torah effects.
V'zeh sha'amar asaf, baruch ha'kedish, ba'ad kol k'nesis yisrael shebegoyla. And this is what Asaf wrote in his...
Is that in Tehillim?
Yes, it's in Tehillim.
I thought that was a...
Yeah, in his blessed with divine inspiration on behalf of the whole congregation of Israel who were in exile. Ani ber v'lo yeda behemas ha'isi imach va'ani tamid imach. That I am a boor and I don't know. I was a behema with you and I'm constantly with you. Meaning to say... That means to say, even though I'm like an animal, yeah, even though I'm like an animal, but I'm with you. Okay? What does it mean? He doesn't feel it. Because he didn't feel it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It's like this.
Right.
You know, so... It's interesting about a behemoth. It says a behemoth knows where its meal's coming from. Okay, animals usually don't attack their masters because
that's
if
right.
they do, they're not getting fed.
Right.
You know, so they know at least about that.
Yeah.
We, on the other hand, where's our guy, our life coming from? It's coming from Hashem. Do we bite the hand that feeds us?
Most often.
Yeah, yeah we do. We're not even as smart as dumb animals, as they call them.
That's it, yeah.
So now, what's going to happen now when a person is aware of all this? So he's going to be overcome with this tremendous awe that he had. All for Hashem, which is how we started the whole chapter to begin with. We're now arousing this natural love of Hashem.
Yeah.
I understand that Hashem gave me life. Hashem made a whole entire universe in order that He should put me here, that I should be able to have some sort of divine purpose. That has now a twofold effect. A very humbling effect because I appreciate the greatness of Hashem and overawed by Hashem. And also an admiration for Hashem because Hashem is such a great guy, you should pardon the expression, that He even did this for me. As we spoke about last week when we talked about Maidani. And there's different levels of love that he mentions here. Either a great love, which is a love like delight, that you could find Judaism geschmack. Or Kirishbe Esh, or a fiery, burning, passionate, longing, lustful love for godliness. Kamidas HaTzadikim, just like those righteous people, Shenizdache Choymrem, that they have purified their body. Yeah, I think I mentioned this also last week, maybe the week before, of Rema Lipsky, is to say that when the Rebbe would be saying L'chaim to the people in the Fabrangans, so he said, we'd all look just like a bunch of goats. I said that last week? I said it to somebody last week. Because the Rebbe's on such a level, you know, that he's looking at us, and what does he see? He sees a bunch of behemoths. And not even really smart behemoths, just like a bunch of goats. L'chaim goat, l'chaim goat. This is the way of Rama Lipsker uses it. Because on what kind of level are we? Where are we holding? You know, what are we doing? You know, we're raising our cups and we're saying, l'chaim, Rebbe, look at me. You know, hey, you know. And this is like l'chaim goat. This is the way of Rama Lipsker used to. You know, because the tzaddik has so purified their physical body. That the physical world becomes of secondary importance. And this person who's a grub boor hasn't.
Yeah. It's more like a person who can see and a person who can't see.
No.
The Rebbe can see the holiness that the person can't see in themselves.
That's true.
And so he may not be seeing it.
I can imagine somebody like the Rebbe saying, such a pity.
It's such a pity. It's more like that. I think it's more that he's seeing a board. It's a goal.
The Alter Rebbe had a chassid, who was it? I mean, Yehudiel Leibler, one of those chassidim, who said to the Alter Rebbe, I'm compared like the cat. And it's not like you have the cat, then there's me, and then there's Alter Rebbe. It says you have the Alter Rebbe, and then me and the cat are on the same level. This is one of his more erudite scholar students.
If I'm lucky.
Right, exactly, you know. The cat never does anything wrong.
Yeah, the cat doesn't do anything wrong. So, yeah.
The cat less never than, speaks in davening.
Less than an at?
Yes, exactly. The Yitrish Kadmach, we heard that before. This whole idea about feeling, what's missing there is das. Of all the things that we have to do, the hardest of them all is das. Das means to feel a connection to Hashem.
Come to knowledge.
Correct. We've used, I don't know how many chapters ago it was, we came up with the
through the godly soul.
The idea of knowledge, of feeling connected to Hashem is the same way like you feel connected to your cell phone. What happens when you walk out of the house and you leave your cell phone home?
You feel it's missing.
Something's missing there. Yeah. Whether you have to go run back and get it, or you say, I don't have time to run back and get it, but now the whole day is going, you're reaching for the cell phone,
like
you know.
Bluetooth connection. It's phone.
Yeah, it's like, you know. And now they even have a thing. For people who keep their phone on vibrate like I do, there's something now called phantom vibrate syndrome.
I've heard of this.
People imagine it. Even if they don't have their cell phone in their pockets,
they feel like this.
They feel like they're going like this. They're grabbing for where their cell phone is because they feel it vibrating.
Right.
Okay, that's such a connection that they have with their cell phone.
Is it?
Okay?
That's a bit sick.
Try doing that. I'm a bit guilty of that. But try doing that with God.
Yeah.
Walk out of the house and feel to yourself, okay, I got my car keys, I got my cell phone, and I got God. Put God on your checklist. There's a bumper stick for you. Sticker for you. Put God on your checklist. Mm-hmm. Am I taking God with me?
Yep.
And that means to feel it, like you feel like I got my car keys, I got my cell phone, I got my glasses on.
Let's not put him fourth or fifth on the list, though. I got a problem with that. No.
Listen, on the list is, you know.
I hear. On the list is good, but I mean, four or five, no. No.
I'm not going to comment.
I hear.
Afal Pekin, because if you guys got on the list, it's better than most of
Okay, fine, sure.
Afal Pekin, Ani Tami Dimach, but still, did I skip something? She's not going to remember the list. Dasu Lashon, Hergashu, Ben Avshikol, Yeah, Afal Pekin, Ani Tami Dimach. But even though I'm such a behemoth, I'm such a boor, I'm so insensitive, but I am constantly with you. Ki ein hachomer moineya yichud hanefesh b'orin zeh boruchu hamamali kol omim. Because, just because I can't feel it because of my insensitivity doesn't mean that it's not happening. K'mo shekasov gam choshech lo yachshech mimchas. It says darkness doesn't make dark for Hashem.
Right.
Because you don't see it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It exists. Ubeze Yuvin Chaimer Einish Isr Malacha Bishabas Vachamas Bepesach. Now I understand why is it that the punishment for working on Shabbos or eating chametz on Pesach is so severe. You're talking death.
Yeah,
spiritual death.
What is it? Death. A person who is warned before two witnesses. A person who, no, we're talking halacha. A person who is warned by two witnesses, don't do that which you're about to do or on Shabbos, or you're going to get killed, and does it anyway, is thrown off a cliff on his head. Likewise, a person who is about to take a cookie on his mouth on Pesach, and two witnesses warn him and say, don't do that, you're going to get killed, is thrown off a cliff on his head. That's pretty extreme when you're talking about all it is a cookie. Because eating a cookie, I get killed. You know, it sounds like Lahavila Mirzo Rab, you know, that the guy stole a loaf of bread and he got 20 years in solitary confinement, Devil's Island, or whatever he gets. I don't remember the book. It was on 8th grade when I read it. So Hashem lekol nefesh lefisha avkiv nefesh bur v'amar is gomer meyer or kedusha Shabbos v'yantav v'nidin v'nefesh v'karis v'skila al-chil kedusha zu, because this person, even though this person might be a boor and might be insensitive, still, the sanctity of Shabbos still permeates that person.
Mm.
It says in Tosfos, there's a Tosfos in Masechta Shabbos, in Masechta Bava Kamma, talking about the difference between a shor tam and a shor muad. Okay, there's a law that says that if an ox gores one or two times, you pay half damages. If it gores the third time, then you have to pay full damages. Okay, because it now becomes a habitual thing. A guy has to be, take more care of it. So it says, what happens? We discuss the whole discussion. What does it mean three times? The animal gored on Thursday, Friday, Saturday. It's not a muad, because Shabbos is different. If the animal gored on Thursday, Friday, Sunday, it's a muad. If the animal gored on a Shabbos, now it's a muad for Shabbos. So it does bring up the question, how does an animal know when it's Shabbos? Okay, so the answer, the Tosfos over there gives a very balabatish answer. It sees that, for example, it's getting milk different. For example, if it's a cow, milking cow, the owner is wearing different clothes. It freaks out the animal that it doesn't see the things in this. The truth is that because an animal doesn't have das, so it has an ability to understand spirituality. If we understood spirituality, we'd go crazy.
Mm.
But animals that don't have any intellect, they see spirituality, they're not going crazy. I mean, I was always raised, I was raised in a Schwarzer neighborhood, and I was always told that cats can see angels.
Mm.
Whenever they're, they're standing there, the cat's looking at the angels. Okay? What do I know if cats can see angels? Or Mrs. Lee down the block, who was the one who told it to me, could say, knew that cats could see angels.
Right.
But let's say, for the argument's sake,
okay,
why would a cat be able to see an angel? Because its brain is only a quarter of an ounce big. So it was not going to get freaked out by seeing them. The gam mashu hu chametz a tiltel muksa poigim be kedusha shal nafshei kemei be kedushas nefesh atzadik ki toyu achas l'kulana. And it says, just even like muksa, for example, something so insignificant as that, it's a rabbinic decree. Moving a pencil for no reason on Shabbos means that this person has caused some kind of a blemish on their soul. And he's not, because he doesn't have that sensitivity. He hasn't refined his body like a tzaddik has. Because the Torah is the same for everybody.
Mm.
You understand, if a tzaddik who can see the spirituality knows by moving this pencil what's going to be the ramifications.
It's destroying the world.
So, okay, we understand. If he moves it, so he should get, but me? No. There's only one Torah.
Right.
Hashem didn't say we got the Torah for the righteous people. We got the Torah for the wicked people. He's like, Hashem, there's no Shulchan Aruch for the Reformed Jews. Oh, I'm a Reformed Jew. Yeah. That doesn't exist. In the brackets now.
That they agree with.
Kamo Shekasev, Behemoth Lashon Rabim. It says Behemoth on the onions. I'm animals, plural. Loremus Kilofanav Yisborach Gambachin is Das Elion Hakir Luchasen Gevura Nidmaka Behemoth Vasiya Gufanis Gavi or Ainsiborachu. That means to say that even the highest perceptions of godliness, meaning even from Hashem's perception, the only things, they talk about this in Shor Yochad Vamuna, that the only thing that does exist is godliness, and we're not going to go into it now explaining it, because we're going to explain it when we get to chapter 1 of Shor Yochad Vamuna. Even that's like a behemoth to Hashem. That's like a physical action.
Mm-hmm.
Because Das Elyon means that the world exists as godliness.
Right. It's a separate entity.
So there's a... No,
appears,
it's not separate.
Appears.
There's not even... No. Even for Das Elyon, that the only thing that exists is godliness.
Okay.
So even the world, as it exists only as godliness, is still low level for Hashem, because you got the word world there.
Right, because it's a creation.
And that's called a behema.
Yeah.
As the verse says, and the Alter Rebbe quotes this quite extensively throughout Tanya, that for Hashem, wisdom, which is the beginning of the creation process, is for Hashem an action. V'nikra behema rabba, it's also called the great behema, as explained in other places. V'hu shem ban gematria behema shalifnei atzilus. That this refers to the name of Yudke Vavke. That when you spell it out, Yud Vav Dalet is Yud, Hey is Hey Hey, Vav is Vav Vav, and the second Hey is Hey Hey. If you add up all of those letters together, numerical equivalents, you get the numerical value of 52, which 52 is the numerical value of the word behema, of animal. And this is a level of godliness which corresponds to tohu, corresponds to ratzon. It's a level of godliness which comes before creation, which is why, for example, we can eat animals and live from them, because the source, the spiritual source of an animal, is from a higher place than the spiritual source of a human being. So even such a level like that, he wants to say, is just called a behema. Even the level Yud Kei Vav Kei, as it's spelled out, Yud Vav Dalet, Hey Hey Vav Vav, and Hey Hey, for Hashem is like an animal. To be continued, chapter 47, next week. Stay tuned.
Second, I thought there was.